everyone, and welcome into another episode of the Make Comics Podcast, the show where we talk about the nuts and the bolts of making comics. I'm Joey Groh, he's Jim Gibbons, and we're going to be talking about anthologies. Jim, from getting to know Andy Schmidt at Comics Experience and how, just in general, Comics Experience runs, and how Andy teaches his comics writing class, and then how everything else kind of works around that in terms of penciling, coloring, lettering, etc. I know Andy's big thing is having folks begin telling short stories, like start off with the 5-page. It's great that you might have your 100-issue multi-part epic that you'd like to tell, but you know, the reality of time, the reality of cost, the reality of learning, 5 pages, or yeah, 5 pages to tell a story, not a ton of time. And what you kind of figure out going into it is how to make a lot of decisions and how to try to tell a complete story in 5 pages, which is not, you know, when I was first starting, that wasn't really something that I thought about, because my brain was all 22, 24 pages equals an issue, and then I should do an arc, and that should be 5 issues or maybe 6, and da 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 da. But in terms of anthologies, you know, if it's a continuing, ongoing story, I'm sure that's got a different beat to it, you know, at 8 pages or 6 pages versus a done in one 5 or 8 pages. So your background with Dark Horse Presents, you know, that alone, I cannot imagine, you know, to me as a kid, that was the anthology series, was DHP, and you, what all you got in that. But just from a, you know, editorial standpoint, I can't imagine what you had to go through to, you know, make that book ship on time and to also just wrangle all those stories. So for you, you know, how do you think about anthologies?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think you touched on it, like with the short story thing, and I'm a big believer of the kind of, and I'm sure it's advice people give a lot or people say a lot, but I think writing short is harder than writing long. And it is, it's like you, when you have only 6 pages or 8 pages or something like that, it's a lot easier to fill space. Now, given it's more time consuming to write something longer or create something longer, but you also don't have to make some of those hard choices. And so I think in that sense, anthology work, which is primarily short stories, is a really, really good way to go for, you know, building up some, you know, creative chops and working on some good stuff. But when it came to Dark Horse Presents, you know, that's when I was working on it initially, it was an 80-page monthly comic. And so thankfully it was I was kind of the main cat herder on that project. But it was a team effort, you know, certain editors were editing certain stories. I was probably editing half plus of each issue. But at the same point, you know, it's like it was thankfully never entirely on my shoulders, because if it was, I would have died. but you know, I think the thing is, you know, one of the things I always think about with anthologies is they're a different type of storytelling medium. And so whereas a first issue of a comic, you've got to hook people in the first couple of pages and then keep them entertained through, you know, the next 15 or so pages, then really hook them again to buy the next issue at the end of the comic. In anthology, you know, you've got to make your story kind of shine amidst other stories. And I think there's a lot of things to consider kind of initially, which is it's got to be a story that makes sense for an anthology. Like it has to be a story that can be told in a short length. You got to be really cautious about where you start your story. You know, you want to kind of, there's an old, I don't know, another old axiom or bit of advice that I've heard a bunch in my career, which is you know, start your story as close to the action as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that's especially important in an anthology. Like you don't have time to meditate on stuff or waste space. You got to get to the story. Now that doesn't mean you got to jump right into the action. It just means, you know, don't waste a page introducing somebody's, you know, teeth brushing routine or something like that. But then on top of it, I think you got to look at, you know, the anthology as a whole. Now, DHP was really like a kind of like a mixtape of all sorts of different genres and art styles and storytelling. But a lot of anthologies these days have a theme. So I think it's another thing. You got to look at these three pieces when you're putting together your story initially before you even maybe sit down to write it, you know.
Yeah. And I think with the proliferation of crowdfunding comics, I feel like anthologies were ways that people were able to put together comics and get them out, you know, get a big satisfying read in an anthology. I feel like those have cropped up more in recent years in a positive way, where you can have new to comics talent try out stuff, or even folks that are veterans be able to put in a little time and kind of stretch their legs a little bit and do different kinds of stories. The Dark Horse Presents, a good place to try out stuff that might later move into different series length, might move into a mini series or an ongoing.
Yeah, so Dark Horse Presents, I think, is like a pretty unique beast in the anthology space, because it was at least when I worked on it, and I think the version of it I worked on was volume 3, technically. Like, I was, you know, I think DHP volume 1 was maybe 120 issues, volume 2 was another 70 or something, and issue 200 was under my tenure at one point. So, but at the time that I was working on it, Dark Horse Presents was... it was a platform for telling, you know, kind of stories that would maybe only live at any point in Dark Horse Presents. But it was also used as kind of like a testing grounds and a trial run area for different stories. And so what you'd often have is maybe you would have someone going, OK, well, we're going to do this story. We're going to do 3 8-page parts. Or 3 8-page chapters, I should say, over the course of 3 issues. And then that would maybe be like a one shot that would launch a mini series, or a one shot that would be collected in a series if there was enough of a kind of audience or editorial interest after seeing kind of what was put together. And so it kind of gave this unique challenge of, you know, within whether it was, you know, 24 total pages in 3 8-page chapters, you'd kind of have to put together something. And I think this was always essential. Like, even if it was supposed to be the launching port of a series, I found a lot of stuff that ended on like a cliffhanger with that last 8-page installment never felt as satisfying or like it set things up as well as if you really got a story that had a beginning and a middle and an end.
Yeah.
And so I always thought that was one of these crucial things, because DHP at certain points, we would have stories that would go sometimes 6 installments, 8 installments. I think there were certain series that ran long enough that they were serialized in Dark Horse Presents. And then when they were published, they were just published as a graphic novel, not even the launching point of a series. So it was definitely kind of a different thing, because in each issue, you'd also have potentially like an 8-page, you know, one shot story that was a standalone one and done, just a thing. And then you'd have, you know, part 5 of a 12-part series, and then you'd have part 2 of a 3-part series. And so it was always like, then you're juggling, like, what do you launch when and all that. But yeah, there was like there's definitely one of those things where I would always look at it at the end of the day, like, each chunk has to be entertaining. The reader might only pick up Dark Horse Presents 170 or whatever it might be, you know, like, so you can't give them a part 2 of your 3-part story that's 8 pages that are totally indiscernible or unentertaining to a reader just picking up part 1. And so I always thought that's the real thing I think you got to consider with every story in an anthology, is whatever chapter at whatever time, at whenever it's getting published, has to stand alone on its own. You know, it's kind of the same thing with single issues, right? Like, you can't do a 3-issue Batman arc and just have that middle issue be totally incomprehensible to someone who hasn't read the first. Like, you got to do some setup, you got to do all that. And I think that's really something that became important with this serialization aspect. But again, that's probably not a thing that affects a ton of anthologies. And yet at the same point, I would still say, regardless, make sure whether you're getting one chapter and that chapter is 20 pages, or you're getting 3 chapters that are all 8 pages, have each of those chapters and then the story as a whole kind of follow that very much, you know, beginning, middle, and end. Like, people should feel like they're getting a complete chunk of story every time.
And one of the things that you mentioned in your notes with the idea of segmenting work into each of the scenes, you say that it's key for editors, that they're able to see how you progress from a page and how you progress a story. So if you can do that in a short, what you could do moving along. Is that something that, I mean, obviously you know this now, was that something you realized before working on the anthology that, oh, this is key just from you being an editor perspective, but also from you as a writer perspective? Is that how that's kind of transitioned into, I don't even know if it's, maybe it's just reflexive now for how you work and not like, oh, I got to think about it like this, because you've done it so often that you can see how the parts move. And when you're writing for yourself, writing for, you know, for a work for hire job, you know how that needs to go.
Yeah, well, and I definitely, like, I got thrown into the DHP fire pretty early in my editorial career. And when I say fire, I mean, because it was for sure a trial by fire. It was like, hey, we need an assistant editor on this to help get this 80-page monster out weekly or monthly, you know. And it's like, you know, here's some help, but also you just got to dive in and figure it out. And you know, obviously I had people I could turn to for advice and all that. So I wasn't totally on my own, but it was great because you would begin to learn on the job, which I think is, you know, oftentimes if you're allowed to some of the most important lessons that way. But I would get to learn from like great storytellers, you know, like one of the first things I worked on, which I still think is one of the kind of like pinnacle of, in my mind, the DHP models of good storytelling was the first night shift by Francesco Francavilla for the his character, the Black Beetle.
Yeah.
Because he really like took, you know, he's a huge fan of old serials and the character is based on old serial radio and movie heroes. And so he really took that, like this 8 pages is about this. This 8 pages is about this and this page, 8 pages about this, and then this 24 pages is an individual episode of this character's life, and then whatever we do next is like, you know, we'll tie into it a little bit, but it's like you're not going to need to get each part of it. And so you would begin to see how the people who really understood how to tell a story in the anthology kind of method, I guess, or format would really put together the best stories. And so I think it's one of these things, right, where it's like sometimes you got to think about the more buttoned down aspects of or the logistics, maybe is a better way to put it, of comic book creation, right? Like it's not always just about the story. It's about what are you doing with these 8 pages? And within those 8 pages, what do your page turns look like? And what are you doing on each page? And what do you have to establish in this? And if page one, you know, sets up this, then by page 8, do we have some resolution on that or whatever it might be?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the puzzle putting together of storytelling and all those logistics, as well as, you know, oh, what are people going to say? What's going to happen? What's all this? You know, it's like you really have to juggle both of those things, I think, when you're looking at anthologies, which are this, you know, they're putting some sort of limit on you, right? Like very rarely is it like, oh, you've pitched an anthology. Oh, you want to do 90 pages as part of our anthology graphic novel? By all means, do your graphic novel within this graphic novel. Like, no, that's not really how it works. So it's, and I think that's an incredibly powerful exercise for people, is getting those limitations. I've always found that I've found, you know, limitations make me more creative. And I find I like the work I do usually better when it has some of those. And I think anthologies in that regard are really good in that sense. I don't know that if that's necessarily helpful information to help you, you know, write or pitch for anthologies, but there's a little take on that.
There is something about getting under the hood for anything. And I think if you're listening to this podcast, you either like process and, you know, aren't making comics, or you're thinking about making comics, or you're making comics, so you're looking to hear thoughts from other people. But I remember, you know, the first time it was pointed out, or I realized that Raiders of the Lost Ark is a serial in the best sense. Like Raiders of the Lost Ark, the way it beats out is, oh, it's every 8 to 10 minutes we have a something changes, some kind of action.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you start to look at movies in general and go, oh, it's a 3-act structure, but within that 3-act structure, here's the functionality. And, you know, later I rewatched Last Crusade this year, maybe last year, first time in years watched Indiana Jones and Last Crusade, and realized like how well oiled that is as far as, you know, plot, story, mechanism. And I think that, you know, if you were to try to write an Indiana Jones movie, you might just by the nature of knowing what you're writing have those things going into it, you know, have those beats a little bit in the back of your head. But when you really dissect it, you go, wow, this is how they ran this. This is where conflict happens and character happens. And I think anthologies, you know, breaking them down, I'm sure there's different math behind the scenes to how it breaks down. But there's probably a lot of the similar, like, oh, this is how the story beats happen, however you're looking to break it out. And that, I do think that serves you well to go in and take kind of that, I don't know, kill the frog analogy, kill the joke analogy, dissect the joke, dissect the frog, and see how it works, because you can blow it up later if you can for your own purposes, or, you know, follow the format for your own purposes and lead into that next step. And for people starting out, I would think that anthologies would be a good way to get your work out there and to get in front of people, because, you know, if they're paying you for it, great. If you're paying for it, hey, you know, it's only 5 pages or 8 pages versus here's my 22-page comic, or, you know, whatever. It becomes part of your portfolio and part of your sampling. So it's a different
Well,
way
and
in.
I think And I think the thing is, and Raiders of the Lost Ark is a great example, because I think at the end of the day, on top of, hey, anthologies allow you to maybe put together something short and complete that shows you can take a story from page one to whatever your ending page is, which is something that I think editors need to see. And if you're producing it yourself, maybe not even for submission, it's going to be a cheaper, easier product to produce because it's just shorter. And so that's less, you know, to pay an artist or whatever it might be, or less to pay a writer, or however you're, you know, working your creative team. But I think the other thing is, it offers a really unique opportunity to have a story that I think can be all killer and no filler. You know, like, right. I think we've all, if you've read comics at all in your life, I think you've definitely read single issues or graphic novels that are bloated, right? Like they could probably be more interesting if they were only four issues instead of five issues, or the middle five pages of this, you know, 22 page comic are a little like boring because they're clearly just killing a little bit of time, you know? And so an anthology, right? Like, and like you said, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's like, it's something different is happening every little bit, right? So if you've got eight pages or whatever it might be, that means like put together the most badass eight pages you can, then, you know, don't save something for later. Just cram it in there. And I think, you know, I'd probably recommend that writing advice to most people on most things. Like if you're thinking you need to fill things or pad things out, try to find a way not to do it. But I think there's a great opportunity there. And I keep saying eight pages, and I wanted to kind of elaborate on that, because this is something that most people who've worked in publishing will know. But I think it's one of those things that if you haven't, you might not know. But in publishing, printers work in eight page signatures, which is a chunk of pages that they bind into the book. Right. And so most comics are all, and books themselves are all on kind of increments of eight, right? So when Dark Horse Presents was 80 pages, part of the reason for that is because that's 10 eight-page signatures. So if you wanted to make the book smaller, then you'd go to 72 pages to have 9 eight-page signatures. And so one of the things I think to consider as well, right, is it's why I think eight pages is a great length for a short story in an anthology. But the other thing is it makes life easier on an editor. I think usually if they get an eight-page story, or your submission is pitched in 8 pages, because they're the ones who have to look at their book map and go, okay, I have 6 8-page stories. Okay, great. I can print that book up. But if they have like a 5-page story, or if they have a bunch of 5-page stories and a handful of 6-page stories or whatever it might be, then the math gets a lot more complicated. And then you got to figure out, like, at the end of the day, like, what amount of pages do these equal up to that it works on an 8-page signature type thing. So, you know, it basically means if someone pitches you a 5-page story, you either need to find a 3-page story, or you need to find, you know, I guess what would the math be on that, in a 11-page story to make the signature work out. And so that's like, you know, this is another thing to consider, which, you know, it doesn't mean you can't tell a 9-page story, but also if your story is 9 pages, is there something you can, you know, tighten up to make it 8 pages? Because if you submit certain things to an editor in an anthology, they will probably ask you to do that as well.
Yeah. And so much of that, I'm sure, was, you know, again, becomes kind of just how you reflexively think about it. But I remember the first time I saw an artist draw a script in thumbnails that I had written that was, it may have been 8, it may have been 5 of the final that had been put together, I realized how much I needed to change how I was approaching the page in my writing, because it was a lot of filler getting from A to B. But the steps along to putting together something to send off to a printer to print was just like leaps and bounds of, oh, I did all this wrong. And and even just self-lettering and do stuff that I would never show people, but to go in and get the physical, like, I got to do this and learn how to letter because I want to figure out how to think about lettering and look at art. It all of that went so far to help inform me of how to think about writing and how best to serve the rest of the creative team, and how best to utilize the rest of the creative team and see what they would bring to what I was doing. And it sounds like, you know, I've never tried to do a 9-pager, an 11-pager. I don't even know if I've tried to do a 3-pager, but it sounds like a good exercise in putting something together to put out.
Yeah. Well, and I think the thing is, you know, it's, you know, you learn by doing in a lot of ways. And I think hopefully some of the advice here is helping you to avoid certain things you might do wrong. And I think it with anthology stories, it's like important to think about length and to think about like how many pages that is going to look like in comparison to whatever else it might be. I think where your story starts and making sure you're not leaving that filler in, and then kind of amplifying that bit of advice to making sure you're also like putting together the most kick-ass however many pages you have is, I think, incredibly important. But because – and so I did something I haven't done yet on this podcast. But because I'm just one editor of an anthology in the past, I thought, well, I know other editors. I will reach out to one and get some advice. So, What a concept, right? Like, I'm just acknowledging my own faults and as a human, right?
It's always good to get other opinions and insight from somebody who's doing it or done it.
Yeah, but so I reached out to my good friend Tanika Stotz, who's the most recent editor to receive the Eisner Award for Best Anthology, for a book called Elements, Fire, a Comic Anthology. Elements Fire, a Comic Anthology by Creators of Color. I had that split in lines on my note and I botched the title. My bad. But so anyway, she handed out, I just said, you know, do you have some quick advice that you could share of what helps when you're getting submissions? Cause she's run a few anthologies and has another one that I believe is taking submissions soon. The next installment in the Elements series. But, her initial one was, I think, a great simple one to follow is read the rules of submission. whoever's running an anthology, whether it's at a publisher, whether it's a Kickstarter, whatever, they are going to get more submissions than they can possibly put in the book. They definitely don't want, you know, to spend more time on something than they need to. They definitely don't want to have to sift through stuff that clearly has been submitted by someone who did not read the rules of submission, who is giving you a sci-fi story when you need horror stories or whatever it might be. So I think some of that advice is good. Read the rules, you know, read the instructions, and then also, you know, try your best, but to do so you don't waste someone's time. You make a editor's life easier. Things are going to be better for you in the long run, whether it's that anthology or another one. Her next bit of advice was tell a story that engages the imagination, but doesn't necessarily use the theme directly. She pointed out an example of in the fire anthology, doesn't necessarily mean do a story that literally has fire every time, but maybe a story that has something about desire or passion or right. Other takes on that theme. And so for me, I think, you know, kind of an additional take that I have on what I think is very good advice is I think it's good to take a little bit of time to make sure you understand the theme or goal of the book and make sure your pitch, you know, represents that. Take a little time to think about it, get creative, and if you have a great story and it maybe doesn't fit that anthology, that's okay. Sit on that, you know, like don't submit something that doesn't make sense just to do it. And then the last bit of advice that Tanika sent along was, make sure if it doesn't ask you to, I think this is probably something this is my little addition to her advice, but I'm sure it varies from anthology to anthology. So you might be asked to submit a little bit of, you know, a sample page or something like that. But she says if you're not asked to, you know, don't put your whole pitch in the submission. The quote she gave me was, "I understand it takes a lot of confidence and some courage to sometimes submit, so don't diminish that accomplishment." And I think, again, this goes down to, you know, don't copy and paste like your 8-page script into a submission field if the submission field only asks you for a 100-word summary of your, you know, pitch. You know, a lot of the initial phase of these things is just, hey, give me the elevator pitch or give me kind of the basics of this so I can see if, you know, it interests me and then we can talk more about it. And so don't kind of flood people's inboxes with more than they need, you know. So hopefully that's some additional advice from someone who is actively putting together kick-ass anthologies. My DHP experience is a few years old now, so.
Well, I think that last bit, it hadn't even really, I mean, I guess in a lot of times you want to leave people wanting more and tease, but I guess in anthologies I might think, you know, my default rest mode might be try to tell a lot of the story there versus give them a little bit because of the volume of submissions. But I think that's great advice. And then she's on Twitter. You have her at Tanika Stotz, which is at TANEKA, and then Stotz is STOTTS. Just to spell that out for folks who might be interested in finding out more. And she's got a great Twitter feed.
Yeah, definitely give her a follow. And I think Elements Earth is the next anthology, which I believe the fourth Kickstarter anthology Tanika has run. So she's, you know, a full blown expert and an award winner, a multiple award winner at this time. So definitely someone to, you know, follow. You know, maybe you are someone who could apply to an upcoming anthology for her. But bare minimum, you're going to get some quality content there.
Some quality content there. Well, if you'd like to submit a question to hear more about the thoughts of folks here on the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast, you can submit to the Comics Experience email, which is info@comicsexperience.com. You can also tweet at Comic Experience on Twitter, and we will talk about it here on the show. Jim, anything that you can talk about? I know both you and Heather are kind of in phases of stuff that you can't really share what you're working on at the moment.
I do have one little bit of new thing that I can share, though it's mostly just a little bit of information that won't become applicable till like March or something. But I wrote a comic that was recently announced. It's a partnership between a Oregon brewery called Ninkasi and Dark Horse Comics, and it's called The Legend of Ninkasi, The Rise of Craft. And the short pitch is more or less it's like kind of a Conan Red Sonja comic that's all about beer. And it's so if you like beer and comics and beheadings and ass kickings and like good fantasy stories and stuff like that, keep an eye out for that. I think it might only be available in where Ninkasi beer is distributed. But it's an issue that I believe will accompany a beer sometime in the winter or spring. So, you know, I'll post more information on it later, but there's a little tease.
if only comics readers liked any of those things. If only.
Yeah, well, and if you don't, I mean, maybe try them together and you will.
I think you have a hit. I think you have literally, no pun intended, all the ingredients for what people want to read.
I hope so. It was a lot of fun to work on, and really excited to collaborate with the guys at Ninkasi, who are amazing to work with. So it was fun.
Nice. Well, maybe when that comes out, we can devote a little bit of time to it, or we can even talk about it ahead of time. That might be interesting to talk about a non-traditional kind of comic that maybe had some creative services aspect to it, which I don't know how often those kinds of things get talked about, and maybe would be of interest to listeners, where some companies, and maybe this isn't how it came about, but I know in the case of like a Marvel or DC, they have creative services that they sometimes do mm-hmm. to say, hey, we'd like to, you know, Superman and teeth brushing seems like a great fit. So right. We're going to release this Superman tooth brushing, you know, through the Department of Health. And it's 5 pages of Superman talking about brushing your teeth, and Jim gets to write it. And who's going to draw it?
They're definitely kind of more rare and random, but at the same point, you know, my first comic ever was Captain America Meets the Asthma Monster, which was given to me at age 6 in an allergist office. So, you know, like that in my mind, and you know, and I think I learned it when it was like written by Louise Simonson, and like, you know, it's like, you know, at some point in the Marvel offices, she just popped that out, and that was my first comic, and you know, here I am today, I guess. So,
and ever since then, it's the Captain America punching asthma cover that you reference.
Exactly,
that's how
exactly.
It started.
I can't get enough of it. Can't get enough.
You're on Twitter at @TheJimGibbons. Go follow Jim and sign up for his newsletter, which is one of the best comics related newsletters I've read, because it's a bunch of information and you cover a lot of topics in a short amount of time, and it's one I look forward to.
Yeah, thank you. Reminds me I need to go write one, actually.
And I know that you can find that on Jim's Twitter, which is why I say it's her information about it and Jim's site. Well, if you have any questions about comics, go to comicsexperience.com. And I know there's a number of courses that are happening now and signing up for now, and you can see if those might be where you'd like to take a next step. But there's always a great lineup of folks over there on comicsexperience.com that are teaching the classes or assisting the classes, and you can go and get really good, solid industry feedback, or go on the Comics Experience Creators Workshop and do the same. Sign up and participate and go in and critique other folks' work in a constructive way and get that constructive criticism back on your work. And it is nothing but improvement from doing both, at least in my experience. So until next time, keep making comics.